Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Humble Coach Podcast. I am your host, Coach Porrick, and we are up on episode number 59, ladies and gents. So thanks again for joining me. In today's episode, I got a chance to chat to Ryan Devlin. Ryan is currently the lead sports scientist with the Sheffield Wednesday under-18s. He has in the past worked with Crewe Alexandra, Ulster Rugby, and Hockey Ireland, to name a few. We had a great chat today, folks, so hopefully you enjoy the conversation, and I'll chat to you soon.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Coach Porrick here in the Humble Coach Podcast. We're up on episode number 59, and I'm really pleased to say that I've been joined today by Ryan Devlin. Ryan, thanks for joining me, man.
Pleasure. Pleasure as always. Pleasure as always.
So, Ryan, you're about to head back into lockdown. I think, is it tomorrow? Are you looking
tomorrow, back in?
So, he's going to be a busy man on the background, never mind, not on the, in the front end of it at the moment. But Ryan, thanks for joining me. Could you give us a quick little spiel about your background and kind of where you're at the moment and how you kind of get into coaching?
Yeah, no problem, Patrick. So basically started, so obviously from Ireland County down, went to John Moores University in Liverpool, done my undergraduate degree in sports science, sport and exercise science. Off the back of that, done a master's in strength and conditioning, also in John Moores, which is really, really good. It's kind of run by Dave Clark, Carl Evans, boys like that, Rob Erskine, very, very good master's. Off the back of that, at the end of that master's, the placement, I had the choice whether to stay in England and do it or go home to Ireland. And because I hadn't been in Ireland in a couple of years, I decided to go back. So I had a placement sorted with Irish Women's Hockey in Dublin. So I ended up staying in that for a month because it was only part-time, logistically it was just too hard to travel up and down from the north all the time. So through a couple of contacts, I was fortunate enough to get a placement with Ulster Rugby, where I spent 4 to 6 weeks, I think it was five and a half weeks or something like that. Which was a great experience. Obviously was involved working with like the likes of Jacob Stockdale and Roy Best. That was kind of my first experience in the kind of elite environment. It kind of blew my mind, really. Nice. Off the back of that, I was kind of in that gray area afterwards. Was end of my master's, was back in Ireland. The opportunities in Ireland aren't that really that great in terms of professional sport, full-time environments. So there was an opportunity to come up with Crewe Alexandra with Liam Anderson over there. So I flew back to Liverpool, took the position there as the first team strength and conditioning coach, spent 14 months there. And then a position came up at Sheffield Wednesday as the lead sports scientist with the 18s. So applied for that, was fortunate enough to get that last November. And I've been here ever since. So that's nice. Kind of my journey so far.
Cool. Well, it's pretty solid. Like, and you're with the under 18s at the minute. And you're the lead sports scientist. I suppose there's a couple of kind of pieces on that. So, your current role with the 18s has between November and obviously the kind of whole lockdown situation at the start of the year and stuff. Was there any big differences you noticed between the under 18s at Wednesday compared to your first team role with Crewe? Was there any big kind of differences in that few months that you noticed, or was it just a change of emphasis on development rather than performance?
So yeah, I think there was definitely a couple of big changes. So going when I was at Crewe, obviously I was second in command in terms, because Liam Anderson obviously run the program there, in terms of sports science side of it. And then I went to Sheffield Wednesday, where I was in control over the whole program, so I kind of had my scope to do whatever I wanted. In terms of speaking about the athletes that I worked with, so when I was a career, I worked with kind of more older athletes. So the age range is probably from about 24, could range anywhere from 24 to maybe 34, 35. Mm-hmm. That was the range, but we're obviously, I'm at Wednesday working with the 16s and 18s. So there's a massive, for me, there's a lot bigger emphasis on the athletic development side when you're working with the 18 squads. Because I think that kind of age gap, it's very, very important for physical development, because you're obviously trying to produce first team players. But obviously at Crewe, there was this well-established first team players. And in all honesty, if you increase the back squad of a 28, 29, 30-year-old football player, do they really care because they've been there and done it? So I kind of find it, in terms of establishing buy-in, it was definitely harder at Crewe to obviously get them to adhere to a programme and lift weights and put load on the bar. But obviously with the 18s, for me, obviously education is massive. And so I constantly am educating the lads in terms of how this is going to improve their performance, how it's going to help them. And the buy-in has definitely been better at Sheffield Wednesday with the 18s.
Okay, so there's a couple of good points there. So I suppose sometimes you might think that even with a kind of lower tier potentially team like Crewe or something like that, not necessarily mad low, but like definitely below Premiership or Championship kind of level, so to speak, that there might be less of an interest in development, we'd say, for someone like Wednesday and things like that. Whereas it seems interesting that even those kind of teams, the feeder teams, nearly to a small extent, are such a priority on development. Whereas with the likes of Crewe, for example, like you mentioned there's a few kind of maybe more journeyman kind of players and stuff like that who are maybe not as ambitious. They're just happy to kind of stay with their job and kind of keep tipping away and stuff. So they don't have to, they don't feel the urgency to overdo it on the weight work or the strength work and stuff, or they wouldn't be as comfortable on the injury prevention kind of spiel as you would normally kind of like. Yeah. They're a bit more hardied maybe down in those kind of leagues as well, potentially. Yeah. So they had that kind of a different vibe. Was there much of a difference between, did you have much experience with the development squads with Crewe as well, or was as a kind of assistant, were you linking much between the first team and the development squad?
Yeah, so I assisted in kind of the implementation of the gym sessions with the kind of 9s to 16s, mm-hmm. Not the 18s, because the 18s were full-time. But in terms of at Crewe, like, not to say they didn't lift, they did actually lift a lot. It's mm-hmm. just that just hard trying to find a kind of buy-in into terms of like putting weight in the bar to kind of try and get physiological change in, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? But then again, in saying that, when I left Crewe, I got promoted. Mm-hmm. So they were a very, very good footballing team. Saying that comes mm-hmm. to the question is, like, in terms of strength and conditioning and sports science, it's kind of just part of the puzzle, do you know what I mean? They were also really, really good yeah. technical footballers as well. But in terms of in the youth side, they do place a massive emphasis on athletic development, especially when I was there, because Sam Vance was there at the time. He's quality strength and conditioning coach, and he placed a massive emphasis on physical development. But I think Crewe's well known for producing really good academy yeah. players as well. I understand about that. So yeah, it was really, really good experience there.
Yeah, that's probably a good point, I suppose, is in there are certain teams that just with their general notoriety and their history, that they would have a good either development squad, or they'd be very well known for developing players, or there's certain other teams that would be not necessarily looked at as kind of an older team, but more just general, like, as in they wouldn't have produced a huge amount of spectacularly famous players or anything like that, so that that team now looks like a more journeyman kind of a team, you know what I mean? They don't look like because they haven't produced a huge amount, that their development squad might not be unbelievable. And you're kind of like, well, yeah, but I was only looking, actually, this is a bit of an offshoot, looking at something like the under-17s English team yep. from a few years back that won, was it the European Championships maybe, or the World Cup? I can't remember exactly what yep. it was, but that's Phil Foden and a few different guys were on that team, like, and they're really, really good players, but then the midfielders and all the defenders, they were all in these kind of lower tier teams and stuff like that. So
yeah.
it's just, sometimes it can be funny like that, you would have nearly a positional challenge to it as well. Like if you're a marquee kind of player and you're a forward or you're a winger or something like that, or you're a very, very high skilled midfielder, then yeah, you might get a bit more of a push on it. And yeah. so that's where, and even listen to another podcast of the day about that, if you're given the right opportunities at the right time, you can develop really, really fast. Whereas if you're kind of stuck and you don't get the right breaks, you're caught, and then you could easily switch into that journeyman kind of a vibe, you know? And that's where it's, probably where you're at the moment with Sheffield Wednesday, with those under-18s, you're in a prime spot for improving those opportunities, you know?
Yeah, I think that in terms of, like, we're always preaching this at Sheffield Wednesday, like, when anybody's saying that scholarship, they have 2 years and that's it. Like, they have literally 2 years and they have to put everything, we're constantly preaching, like, to them it's a 9-to-5 job. Like, they have to be, every day they have to be on it in terms of developing technically, tactically, physically, everything comes into it. Because I know they do their education on the side, but everything has to be full on. Like, as soon as they walk in, we try to preach. As soon as they come in the door at 9 o'clock, they are switched on. And that's what we try to preach constantly. Like, because they only have 2 years, and if that 2 years passes them by like that, they're into that kind of football world, and it's tough to get something out of it then. You know what I mean?
Mm. But exactly like you mentioned there, that once the first team games kind of start flowing, or there's even a bit of politics in getting into the team and stuff like that, it's very hard to maintain that mentality towards, okay, well, I'm going to come in and do my training every morning, da da da, the same as normal. Whereas sometimes there's that extra stress of, okay, well, am I going to be able to make the team for the following week? Is there any drama with the coach? Da da da. I'm trying to take this other player's spot. All this kind of stuff, and it can definitely distract you from. I'm sure distract players from doing the hard graft. And like you mentioned, maybe adding load to the bar where they're. And we've talked, I think, a little bit before about this, and on different kind of in different areas, that certain players might be minding themselves a bit because they're like, look, I want to get a good game at the weekend. So I'm like, I'm just going to hold tight a little bit on the Tuesday or the Wednesday. I'll just kind of ease in a bit longer of a taper towards the weekends. So, and they do prime strength days for them to actually build really, really good strength and really good quality movement. Yeah. But they might, of the 52 weeks of the year, you know, maybe 10 weeks of that is too moderate compared to what they should be going for, you know?
Exactly. In terms of the point you made about getting the lads up, I think that's as coaches were, I think that's a massive part of our job. So, for example, there's been times where we have competing a Saturday and the boys come in the Monday and it's all doom and gloom. And I think as a coach, one of my roles is to try and get them, just trying to get them to reestablish the goals. Like, on that Monday, can we come in and can we rectify the wrongs of kind of last week? What can we improve on from last week? But it is tough, because at the end of the day, like, the ones that I work with, 16 to 18 year old lads, they are still kids, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Instagram and Facebook and all that type of stuff, do you know what I mean? So it's hard for them to kind of lose track of the goals, and then they get down in the dumps and how to manage their emotions and stuff like that. That's what I definitely find working with the 16 to 18s anyway.
Yeah, it's even funny looking at, there was a photo I saw the last day of Mourinho, and he's in the dressing room with, I think it was Dyer, and it's like four or five of the lads, and they're all on their phones. And even the assistant coach is on his phone, and he's like, what the fuck? And those guys are giving it loads like that. It's very, very, very tough for the underage groups to switch away from that, because like we mentioned kind of off the record there, as in, there's such an emphasis now towards so many different types of, be it speed training, be it strength training, and there's huge emphasis more on just general fitness stuff, kind of, and there's a bit more of a mesh now as well of like performance work and general fitness work, and you're kind of like, well, there's still a huge, huge difference depending on the person. I think that's where I'm sure you found it kind of you might have found it challenging potentially with some of the players, that they will have certain ideas on the types of training or something like that that you've been putting in, and you're kind of like, well, look, like, we'll talk about that now, as in, you have I suppose a big interest in strength training and power training and speed training. Has it been a hard sell for some of that stuff to those kind of players, or are they kind of receptive enough to it?
Yeah, so in all honesty, the reception I got at the start was tough. Like, to be fair, like, at the very first start when I came in, I knew that they definitely lifted, but I don't think they realized how much lifting they were actually going to do when I came in. So just to give a bit of perspective around that, so when I came in at the start, we lifted twice a week strength training, depending on the intensity levels we were training at, but we lifted and then we squatted 3 times a week. So for any academy team to squat 3 times a week, people think, geez, that's a bit mad. Like, but in terms of the way I kind of manipulated the sets and the rep schemes to fit into their weekly schedule, that's how I kind of went about it. And I am only seeing in all honesty. I know lockdown was a bit of a disaster because I was only starting to see real results after Christmas, in terms of like all the strength levels were going up and everything was doing well, the jumps were going up, etc. But I'm seeing benefits now, definitely. Because over lockdown, they all got their plans, they were running loads, were doing loads of sprinting. And now, like, in terms of a physical aspect, in terms of the 18s, we've got some really, really good physical athletes in our team, like, especially in terms of like accelerations and kind of max speeds, etc. And that's so I'm only starting to notice that now. But I think that's another thing in terms of strength training, has to be a consistent thing. And I think that's anyone who's kind of worked with me before, I kind of voice my frustration sometimes in terms of trying to get them into the gym, where they're kind of trying to stick into a schedule, because obviously in academy football, listen, that you could have two sessions planned on Tuesday and then we could have a challenge game. Do you know what I mean? So there's a session missed. So if you plan 12 sessions over the next 4 to 5 weeks, you might only get 6 of them done. And then that's, you're kind of losing out in adaptation there. So it's kind of trying to find the right balance of what you can do and what you can't do, and working around the schedule.
So, and that'll bring us kind of, I suppose, back to, and I'm kind of curious on this. So obviously we all have our interests in it. And like one big one for you, like if you're talking about the lads potentially squatting 3 times a week. So where would, I suppose, in your past and in your experience, where's the interest in that level of strength training come from? Has it been like from younger kind of days, or been a couple of situations where you were like, look, I made huge progress and I've just seen huge progress with certain teams? Like obviously with the likes of Ulster and stuff, you'd see things like that and you'd be like, fuck, we can make hay here, lads. You know what I mean? Obviously it's a different sport, but like it's still a high level sport and there's a huge amount potentially available there.
So I think, first of all, I think the kind of interest in strength training came from myself. So when I was in first and second year university, I still play Gaelic football now. I was like completely riddled with injuries. You ask anyone that was with me in uni, especially first and second, loads of hamstring injuries, back injuries. This was a disaster. And it literally was only when I found the barbell that these injuries all stopped, really and truly. So in terms of squatting, heavy lifting, doing RDLs, even Olympic lifts, etc. It was just, I found even in my own game, I was just able to handle a lot more load on the pitch. So then off the back of our masters as well, Dave Clark took our masters and he used to work with the IRFU and he's a big advocate in the back squat and Olympic lifting and kind of doing the brilliant basics and fundamentals, etc. And my interest just really came off the back of that, essentially. So that's why, like, I'm not saying, like, listen, I'm an advocate of the back squat as a primary kind of strength movement, but obviously, listen, if someone has a bad lower back, I'm going to change up the program, trap or deadlift from the floor, so there's less spinal load, etc. But that's kind of where my interests lie. Literally.
No, so I suppose, and that's one of the kind of key ones really to it is in, and go back, I suppose, even to the team that you're working with at the minute and the teams you've worked with, that's a huge selling point to younger players, as in, like, I mean, it's a hard sell at the start because they obviously can't see it. They're like, look, they're just really ambitious. And they're like, look, I'm really energetic about getting into the team and playing football because they just want to play football.
Yeah.
So if they're 16, 17, like all you want to do is play football. Like when I was 16, 17, all I want to do is play football. Constantly just want to play. And you're on, now it's a bit easier because they have more potentially of an awareness of a lot of these different types of movements, that barbell movements and different strength movements that are much more reasonably acceptable these days. But the biggest thing I think has to be, like you mentioned there, it's selling them on the longevity of the career and then really, really goal setting strong with them so that they know. Like I look at even someone like James Miller and they're taking the mick out of him the last day. They were saying like that he was playing lots of different sports when he was younger. And then somebody else was kind of like, well, he wasn't really, like, to be fair, he wasn't with the whole FAI thing recently.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, he's been in the academy since he was 9 or something like that. So you're kind of like, well, he wasn't really doing loads of different sports. He was strength training like a mad thing, but he also is minding himself a huge amount. And he's just a very, very good professional. and has been through, I think most people kind of look at someone like him and they go, okay, well, he's with Liverpool. And you're like, well, he was with a lot of other teams before that, and he was really good at those teams so for years. Yeah,
yeah.
So
I think that's another point, like you just mentioned there, being a really, really good professional. Like, we are always approaching to the lads, like, it has to be like, there's no point us organizing these gym sessions, organizing all these pitch sessions, running them, like lifting heavy, lifting hard, and then them going home and filling themselves full of crap. So it was only on Friday night there, we went down to London and I put on a nutrition presentation for them. And then my manager came over to me afterwards and said, you probably have to do that to them next week again, this same morning. You know, just constantly drill them. Because again, if they're going back to the point, if they're lifting heavy and running hard and we're trying to create physiological change in them and they're not eating their protein, eating enough and getting sleep, well, what's the point? Like, you know what I mean? There will be some, there'll obviously be some adaptation, but you're not maximizing it, are you?
No, but I think that's probably another thing though as well. And this is where the general perception of high level soccer, I suppose professional soccer, is those kind of guys at that age group they're becoming little kind of local heroes, local superstars. So they may not have their Maseratis and stuff, but they definitely have a little bit of money tipping around. They have a bit of an attitude kind of kicking around. You know what I mean? Maybe not a massive attitude, but like, they definitely have an air about them. And especially that, I'm sure there's a handful of players that are very ambitious and they're very, very high quality. You know, they're the ones that we talked about getting transfers, things like this. And whether or not they're the ones who are doing the extra grinding is a different ball game. You know what I mean? They could be the ones that are working the hardest, and then you could be getting more buy-in from that. But it's a hard one to kind of know, because that balance is very tough at that age group to try.
Yeah, the thing is grounded. Like, there is definitely, like, one thing that I've noticed, especially working with the teams, there is them players that, you know, the lads, like, do you know what I mean? The lads, and then you have got their players that there's no, when I'm trying to put this, the lads over lockdown that text me every single week, every single day about what to do. They're the ones that's kind of excelling in the physical stuff at the minute, I would say. And they're constantly asking questions. They're constantly into it. They're constantly texting me to do gym sessions. They're constantly buying into the program. And it's no reason why they're the same boys before lockdown that have came back and they're like this now. And you can notice it. So that's kind of every aspect of their game has been good. And you can slowly see them pulling away on the physical side.
Yeah. But I think, that comes down to just their mentality towards it. I'm sure this goes for lots of different teams, Jesus, but as in, it depends on their background, whether they've come from kind of low enough level of living standard or whatever it is, that they're now kind of much more hungry about their attitude to get progress and success. And obviously it's within a first world country, but like, you still have a huge amount of second and third world kind of nearly locations or spots or kind of mentalities, you know what I mean? Or family situations or whatever it is that make it very difficult for those kind of players to excel. But they, like you mentioned, the really interested ones and the ones that have their goals set correctly are the ones who are going to be doing the work. Like, they really are going to be pushing it, you know?
Yeah, and like, it's only of recent, for example, how like a couple of lads in our team have just recently got cars. So 17, they've recently got cars. And I've seen a massive shift in terms of them wanting to get to the gym now, because they can actually travel to the gym outside work. Obviously now it's closing down, but it's good in that sense. So it just shows that's one aspect of how a couple of lads having cars can go to the gym every night. So if I plan three lower sessions a week and I say, right, you're two uppers, it's not physically possible to get them done in the facility. Like, then I can program for them outside to make sure they do it during the week. Yeah. So that's another way, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm. Ryan, how old are you?
25.
So here's the gig. So I think, I could be wrong, but I think it's probably a lot easier. Yeah, you have both a blessing and a curse being 25 with that kind of an age group, because you obviously have good experience of that age group as well, because it's recent enough.
Yeah.
But you would get certain buy-in from them, but also there's probably a nearly little bit like, he's a bit too close to my age, so I'm going to be a bit friendly with him. Have the crack. So I can take a certain amount of seriousness. But if it was somebody who's like somebody else who's like the 45-year-old or 50-year-old or something like that, a little bit more disconnect. But that's where you're probably in a good spot at the minute, but with the being the leads sport scientists with them and SST with them, so that makes a huge difference. But is there, you mentioned that, is there much of a disconnect? There's obviously a bit of a challenge at the moment with the current situation, and there's a bit of a disconnect between the under 18s and the seniors and stuff like that, but do you see that as being a kind of regular, a more common thing around different clubs as it is, or do you think it's getting tighter and tighter, as in, like, is it becoming more and more collaborative between those? Like, I'm looking at someone like Chelsea or something like that, and there's lots of their younger players drifting into the first team naturally and nicely. So is there much of a collaboration kind of ongoing, do you think?
I think it's essentially in an environment that we're always trying to produce first team players. I think that's like, obviously I'm trying to improve them physically, but you're just trying to get them to the first team level, because it's a pathway, isn't it? And I think that definitely in pro clubs that there is models put in place in terms of from a lifting side and also from a technical side to kind of drip feed them into the first team. So for me, like, so with our under 23s, I'm always trying to prep our lads going into the 23 squad, whoever is fortunate enough to get pro contracts. And also the 16s that come into my group, I'm always kind of collaborating with the 16 sports scientists to make sure. So for me, like, one thing, are they coming up? Can they squat? Can they already out? So I don't have to reteach their movement patterns. So I get ready as soon as the program starts, bang, let's go. Do you know what I mean? So there definitely is them kind of pathways. But I think going back to your point, in terms of the kind of the where I'm 25 and I've got the group of 18s, etc. Like, I'm not, like, I think everyone knows that one of my weaknesses is probably where to be on that spectrum. Because at the same time, I think you need to have a level of authority, right? But you also need to have a level of being on the kind of same wavelength as them, on the same page. Because listen, if you're talking about the same stuff as them and you're interested in them, you're gonna get buy-in from them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, but then there has been times where, like, it, just say we're doing a warm-up and they're taking the piss, and I kind of lose my head a bit, and they'll go, they kind of be taken back, be like, Jesus Christ, I've never kind of seen them do that before. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think that there's definitely, it's a tricky one. I'd say that's why I kind of still, because I've only worked with that age group for a year, I'm still trying to find that balance of where to be authoritative and where to be kind of on their side, friendly, established buy-in, etc. But it's definitely a tricky one. I think that's the age-old question of, you don't want to go the other way and then end up not making you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's the big thing as well, is like you mentioned at the very, very towards the start, they're still very much in development, and they're, a lot of them, like you mentioned there, are very hungry to learn. So you have to have some level of empathy that they're in a challenging position as it is. And even if they're at a moderately high profile club at the moment or whatever it is, that their ambition is very, very strong, and they see all of these very, very high profile players, and they see all these young players, especially getting into these serious teams in the last couple of years. And there's a big, big emphasis on that in the last maybe 4 or 5 years, I think. There's a huge amount of kind of younger players getting in. That's where you can kind of find a challenge in getting that really balanced without annoying them, but you can have a huge say in that. And I think that's where you have to have that level of empathy to kind of find
that. Yeah, of course. And I think that's like, one thing that are going back to that point about play, like, it seems to be a massive trend that clubs are definitely trying to push younger players up as quick as you can in terms of physical development, technical development. But one thing our manager always says, which is like, so we're obviously Sheffield Wednesday under 18s, lads trying to get into the first team. There's lads, or 17, 18 year old lads playing Champions League football. And that is a massive statement in itself for all. Like, that is a realization of like, get to work and let's start grinding. Do you know what I mean? Like that, I think that's definitely something from him that's stuck with me.
Yeah. What a great thing. I think that makes a big difference. But even the whole mentality, and I suppose I'm showing my age now, but like when I was younger, like Sheffield Wednesday was a serious team.
They are a serious team, but
I suppose they are a massive club, absolutely, and I agree. But they wouldn't be massively high profile at the moment, if that makes sense. Like you mentioned, like Champions League and things like this, they may not have all the plaudits at the moment for that, and they may be having some challenge in the league and things like that. But they, when I think there's that, like you mentioned, there's an awareness that the the history of the club really can help develop those kind of players as well by really recognizing it and kind of allowing them to go, look, this can happen again. But like you mentioned, that there is a lot of really serious players at that age group playing Champions League football. And it's a big step, but it's not probably a massive step for some of those players. You know what I mean? As in, they just need a couple of good breaks and they need to just apply themselves fairly well. Like, that's all it is.
No, exactly. That's why we're always preaching that. And like we say, like when the lads are going out to play, like they're stripping out for, they're 16, 17, 18 year old lads stripping out for Sheffield Wednesday on a Saturday. Like, what more do you want? Like, do you know what I mean? That's what we're always preaching. Like, they're so lucky. They are so lucky in terms of being able to come in every day, have the gym, get their food, do their education. Like, what an opportunity that is. So why would they not put everything into that?
Yeah, and I think that's a big one for a lot of players. That's a really good mentality to have. As in, I think that just humility of like, okay, well, look, we're here to work and we have this huge opportunity. And I think that's only going to grow more and more with the current situation and the challenges that we kind of have with that.
Yeah.
So we'll change tact a little now. So we're going to dig in, I suppose, more to the details of, first of all, obviously the difficulty you currently kind of have with the whole COVID situation and even since the last lockdown and stuff. But could you talk a little bit about the couple of things really, the kind of structure that you would have when it comes to the actual training sessions or the lifting sessions, et cetera, and how much of a challenge you have when it comes to the actual balance between their on-pitch sessions, their lifting sessions, what level of volume is appropriate and you have had a chance to do. And then what the kind of, like you mentioned, the minimum effective dose is and how you've found some success with that.
Okay, so we'll kind of go to present. So at the minute, we would have one gym session a week. Mm-hmm. I'll go back to our, so our training loop structure throughout the week would be Monday plus two is a kind of recovery day, 70%, not too intense. Tuesday is a big work day, so we'll max velocity exposure, big spaces, extensive work. So that's kind of your hamstring prep, your high speed running day, volume day. Then we're off on a Wednesday. On a Thursday would be our kind of axel, decel, high mechanical loading, 1v1s, 2v2s, small spaces type work. Mm-hmm. And then a Friday, just a taper into the game. So Friday is typically match prep, cross and finish and shooting, that type of stuff. And then cool. Match stuff on a Sunday or on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the way we work the gym at the minute, we have one gym session on Tuesday morning. Mm-hmm. And it, like at the minute, because we only have one gym session a week, it is a blow, like, to be fair. And it's just one end, because I'm trying to get in what we need to get in. So what don't we get on the pitch? Don't get our volume, we don't get our kind of eccentrics, and we don't get our heavy strength work. So obviously now with the thing kicking in, it'll be a no-go for the next month.
Yeah.
Which would be a bit of a disappointment, but there's nothing we can do about that in this situation. Mm-hmm. So at the minute, that's the way our kind of gym structure works on the Tuesday.
Okay.
But what I found was, so going back to minimal effective dose, so I was finding that once I first started Sheffield Wednesday, the gym sessions was like typically 3 40-minute gym sessions a week. Okay. So first thing in the morning, because I was always like, right, I want to get the gym stuff in first, get quality in that, get good load in that, to get adaptation, then we're going on to the pitch. But what I found was that when they were going on to the pitch after them sessions, so they'd done their power work, they'd done their jumps, they had done their ballistic work, they'd done their strength work, and then their assistance, what I was finding is they were wrecking onto the pitch, like, right?
Yeah.
And then I thought to think that was probably me in a sense being selfish, because the football is the main thing. So mm-hmm. The football is the main thing. Like, there's no point being able to squat 200 kg and jump and clean, etc., when you can't put the ball in the net. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the football is always the main thing. So everything's kind of geared towards football. So what I decided to do was read a couple of papers around kind of minimal effective dose. So essentially to people listen to this, basically what it is applying a stimulus or a dose that's kind of going to get a physical adaptation without causing kind of muscle soreness and DOMS and fatigue, etc. So the way it worked, that was on the, so last year, in terms of the typical training plan throughout the week, on a Monday, again, I'm a big advocate of squatting as well. So we came in and squatted like 5 sets of 2 maybe on a Monday. So that was kind of your So again, I'm always a big advocate of movement. So the movement first, then intent, and then the load. So in terms of movement in the back squat, making sure you get below parallel, maximum glute activation, etc. So for example, on like a Monday, we would do maybe 5 sets of 2 at around 70%. So 70% isn't enough to cause stress, but then it's always kind of movement grooving, always looking at technique. So reinforcing movement pattern, movement efficiency, etc. So then on the Tuesday and the Thursday is kind of where the kind of minimal effective dose stuff come in. So what I decided to do was, right, I want to get intent and I want to get quality work out of the power work, right? And then obviously you want to go on to the pitch work so they're not too fatigued. And then we'll go into the gym. So in the morning, we do 2 exercises for 20 minutes. Maybe that's a plyometric and a jump, et cetera, or maybe 2 loaded jumps with different themes. So that could be a strength speed and a speed strength exercise, whatever way you want to look at it. Then it was out onto the pitch. So I found that the lads listened to it. So obviously going to doing your power work in the gym, they came out onto the pitch. I noticed that they're kind of more stimulated.
Yeah.
Obviously, like the thing about post-activation potentiation, et cetera. So like, they came onto the pitch more stimulated. I thought increasing kind of the CNS, central nervous system. And then in terms of done the session, good session. And then because we didn't need to apply any kind of speed or velocity to the bar when we're going to back squat, etc., then I found that your slower movements, just go into the gym after that and do it, because you don't need to be nearly fresh to do them because it's a slow movement. Yeah. And that's the kind of same structure we applied on the Thursday as well. So in terms of how that would look like from a strength perspective, in terms of sets and rep schemes, so obviously Tuesdays are a big high load day. Then I thought, right, in terms of gym work, want to get in some load. So if you're going to hit them hard on the Tuesday, just hit them hard. That's kind of my kind of philosophy about that. And then let them recover on the Wednesday because they're off. Mm-hmm. So it'd be like maybe 5 sets of 5 on the Tuesday, being around 70 or 75 to 80, 85%. Mm-hmm. So the volume's higher on the Tuesday. And then towards the Saturday, the volume will decrease and the intensity will go up. So it could be 4 sets of 2 at 85 to 90% as your strength work on the Tuesday. So the volume goes up, the intensity. The volume goes down, the intensity goes up towards the match day, and you're tapering for the game on Saturday. So that's kind of how the overall kind of thing.
Well, that's the thing. That's pretty much an ideal scenario. Obviously, with the whole lockdown, it's going to change tact quite a bit, and it's going to change the emphasis on that. But that makes a huge amount of difference, I think, to and this can apply to all sports and all coaches. As in, you've tried a certain scenario and tried to fit it into the actual structure of the week, be it with all the other bits and pieces. And this is probably the hardest part, is like that there's always that technical and tactical piece sitting alongside the actual physical development of it. And like, you want to get your running in, you want to get the appropriate activities on the pitch and stuff, and you don't want to damage that. But like you mentioned, it for the age group that you have, that's where you do have to. There has to be a bigger balance, a bigger emphasis towards the physicality, or at least there has to be a consistent element to it, rather than you can't just kind of switch off and go, look, these guys are very, very high developed athletes at 25, 27. So now that there's going to be purely technical and tactical kind of stuff, you can't do that. And you don't have a huge amount of time for that. And they, like you mentioned, they still have a huge amount of progress to make in their general physicality. Because if you sent them to the first team now or whatever it is, they're not, even the under 23s, they're not ready to handle those, that level of maybe volume of games in a certain period of time, or they might, but like they wouldn't be as effective within the game because their strength levels would be quite poor or kind of moderate. Their speed work would be affected because they would be only working on potentially speed work on the pitch. They wouldn't be supplementing it correctly with the other activities. And like you mentioned, it's the ideal scenario. I think this sometimes looks, gets kind of overlooked, as in certain strength sessions can sometimes be lots and lots and lots of things. And you're kind of like, well, there's not really that much of a necessity for that. Like you could get the exact same thing out of 4x2s, 5x2s, 5x5s, like, and with some accessory work and just a bit of decent plyo work and power work alongside it. Like you don't have to make it this big mad thing. And coming from even like a kind of a CrossFit background, like it's a general fitness background, like there sometimes can be too much of a switch over of that kind of stuff into there, where you're like, look, it still has to become very much specific towards the type of sport you're trying to get and the type of adaptations you're trying to get, whether it's a primarily a sprinting and a running based and jumping based sport. So then you have to appropriately go for that. Exactly. You have to try and build towards those strengths.
I think a prime example was actually yesterday. So yesterday we had an under-17s game, and for the 18s we had like five training. So there's not really much we could have done with five training. So we done like these 1v1s and 2v2s. It was hectic, a lot of XL, D cells, change of direction cells. So I knew there was going to be a lot of East Centre Glow going into them yesterday. But we had our gym session yesterday morning. So then I was like, right, what could we actually do here to get the best out of the pit session, but not wreck them for the pit session at the same time? So what we done was so I kind of picked an area yesterday where kind of felt we haven't touched on that in a while in terms of a kind of, if you want to call it, pre-activation beforehand. So we've done a lot of like hip flexor strengthening work. Mm-hmm. Hip flexor strength, because I think my philosophy has definitely changed over the past 6 months in terms of speed. Like speed is a massive quality that's sought in sport. And I think it's definitely a component that makes a difference in winning games potentially. So creating game winning moments of the game. And I think my programming in terms of that is kind of more speed orientated now, but then it depends on the level of competency of the athlete. Like where are they on that spectrum, do you know what I mean? So there's lads now that, like, I have lads that was got 1.7 times body weight, and now I'm starting to kind of filter them into the more kind of runner mechanics side, elasticity, plyos, isometrics type stuff like that. So yesterday, for example, we went in, done some hip flexor work, and then we done some reactive work, some plyometrics, we done some concentric jumps, and then we literally done 6 sets of 1 at 85%. That was it. So we just got, so for example, I wanted to get a bit of a strength dose in there. So we done 6 sets of 1. Right, lads, away you go. That's us done. And then we went on and done some training. So I didn't want to hammer them in volume, but I want to keep the intensity kind of sky high to keep them intensity just ticking over. And that's an example of how I used that yesterday.
Yeah, and that's a bang on way of working it, because you're still getting a good amount of volume in, but it's very appropriate and very specific volume depending on what they're at. Now, I suppose this brings me to kind of towards the start of the conversation area again, but like, as in at the moment, we'd say with the, and over the last kind of, I suppose maybe a couple of years, even with the likes of Crew and stuff, do you see much of a difference in the experience levels and the ability of, I suppose, the strength training ability of the younger players for drifting further and further into your actual team? So we'd say like the under 18s you're with at the moment, have they much experience in lifting, or have they got a very limited experience and you're one of the first exposures? Like you mentioned, there was some 16s and kind of underage work and stuff, but have you had much work to do when it comes to building the quality of positioning and stuff like that and the awareness?
Yeah, no. So when I came in, so the lads did lift. Thankfully, the lead sports scientist before me was Keith McGrath. He also works at the club, and he is a massive advocate of lifting as well. So it didn't actually have that much to do in terms of movement competencies and kind of fundamentals and technique and stuff. So it was kind of in there, right, bang, let's get this done. I think it was probably the load. And like, to be fair, like after the first couple of weeks, the lads were sore, like.
Yeah,
they were, because they just were, well, listen, I didn't hammer them at the start, but I gradually built it up. But like I knew that was going to happen. But after the after that initial kind of 4 or 5 week period, when they adapted to it, they were fine. They were fine. But one thing I have noticed in a trend that 16 to 18 year olds now coming through, they do realize how important the gym is. Like some of the lads that I work with, like they're obsessed. Like they text me every night when they go to the gym saying, what should I do? What should I do? What should I do? And I think that's a good thing, because they realize, but it needs to be, because that's the way the game's going. Look how physical the game's getting. People are always trying to push boundaries and push running stats and high speed running and meters per second speed, etc. So it has to be the way, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's exactly it, because I think, like all games, they're kind of changing. Everything is becoming a little more physical, and a little bit like speed is obviously the absolute goal of all of these things, and appropriate speed, like axels, decels, like I suppose for the layperson, like the normal person watching soccer, watching any other sports, like they love that the high level speed or the high level skill, and obviously the technical stuff is more nearly almost a little bit harder nearly to develop now, because there's such an emphasis towards the physicality. So some of those really, really tricky players, like you don't see maybe as much like crazy Ronaldinho stuff going on. But you still do see a bit of it, but I think there's definitely a bigger emphasis towards the more physical or the more powerful, at least, and the faster player, and yeah. the value of those in a team, and the value of, like, in the player's mind, the value of that level of stuff to a team, and how they yeah. can really be a great asset to a particular team. So they can be a really, like, the more they work on that, the better of a selling point that is for them.
Yeah, I think, as well. I think, you know, one thing that, like, I listened to a podcast a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember who it was by, but one thing stood out to me, and it was like, so everyone's always preaching, get in the gym, get in the gym, get in the gym. So I'd like to actually hear your opinion on this. What about flipping that and saying, what about the player that doesn't need the gym?
Mm.
You know what I mean? So you might have, we have some players that are really physical, and on pitch physicality isn't the problem. So when becomes the point where you say, do you know what, instead of coming to the gym, why don't you go and practice your crossing, finishing, etc. Do you know what I mean? That's definitely. Yeah. But then I think that there's pros and cons with that, because then they're thinking, oh, you're leaving him out and you're including him. And then again, if you're trying to produce the best players, do you know what I mean?
It's an interesting one. I think that at that kind of age group, we'll say typically like 16 to 18. I think we'd look back at our own experiences at 16, 18 and where our kind of decision-making and our goal setting and where we were at. Like, if you're in obviously it's a different setting, but like if I was one of those kids now and I was getting consistent, like not necessarily massively individualized coaching, but very much like a simple identification of, okay, well, look, you probably don't need the gym a lot more. You're quite physically able to handle this. You can do it pretty well.
Yeah.
This is where we need you to work on. And then they're like, okay, well, what do you mean? How do I, like, I need to work on my actual touch? And you're like, well, if by that stage your first touch hasn't been good, then it's going to be challenging to maintain that consistency going forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Listen, I'm always going to be an advocate of getting people in the gym, whether they're Ronaldo or Messi. Do you know what I mean? Like, but I think it's definitely something like, it was food for thought, which I thought about last week, and probably is true to an extent, but obviously for keeping them on the pitch, injury reduction purposes, you're always going to have them in the gym and lift them.
But I think, I think the gym scenario is, I think it's a good place to, for that kind of age group, it's perfect to kind of keep them in the mix. And like you mentioned, that minimum effective dose and the microdosing mentality is like, it's very much ideal. Like for those type of club situations and those type of team situations, it's very, very hard to beat because it's very flexible as well. You're able to adjust it depending on where they're at. If they feel really, really busted after a couple of particular games or something like that, then it's very easy. You know what I mean? Within the program setting, you don't have a million exercises where you can get lost and go, okay, well, I don't know exactly what went wrong there. You have a certain amount of stuff that you're like, okay, well, this is probably not, I'm going to drop this out or I'm going to change this. So it's immediately like, if that 5x5 became a problem, it now becomes a 4x2. You know that works better straight away. But I think something like the gym is very helpful for those kind of age groups. But I think going back to your question, I think that strength and that confidence built in the gym helps an awful lot bring out the touch and bring out the quality and bring out the skills. Because if they don't have, like, they've obviously got to that point with a certain level of skills. Because I look through any academy teams or any kind of under 12s or under 14s or whatever it is, and the players that come out of that are always relatively high skilled, or at least have a great reading of the game. So they have a great awareness of where they're at when it comes to the actual game management or whatever it is. Or they have, like you mentioned earlier on, they have innate speed if they're a fullback or something like that, or they're a winger. They have some attributes that are going to be vital for their particular position. So if they're Iniesta or Xavi or something like that, they can see everything, they can scan everything, they know what's going on. If you're Van Dijk, you have a great awareness in defense, but you also have great physicality and great speed. You know what I mean? But I think that the gym can supplement that. But I think as well as that, it's kind of funny because there is a challenging disconnect sometimes between that kind of age group and then the kind of merry-go-round of the Premiership or something like that. You know what I mean? Because it's almost like just a Wild West of like all of these different coaches have different mentalities and they have a different attitude to it. And the expression, like when you hear of a certain team kind of really expressing themselves, you're like, oh, that's kind of a bit strange. You know, they're like Liverpool looked unbelievable because there's so many skills, you know.
For example, we're like us as a team, we're always preaching like play with intensity, right? But if all our lads were beasts and physically developed, our intensity would be a lot higher.
Oh yeah.
Do you understand? Like that's sometimes like they can run all day, but if they're not kind of like, for example, like aggressive on the press because they're not good accelerators, for example, like that's how you can kind of blame the physical side with the on-pitch stuff. Do you know what I mean? So it's hard to find that balance because you want to work on their kind of conditioning, but then you want to really to create something in the gym to be able to press like that. So it's kind of like find that balance, which is always going to be the age-old question, isn't it? Like,
yeah, I think it's funny because I was even looking at, I know there's Coach Gary Kearney in the States, and he put up a video. I was trying to find it the other day and I couldn't find it again, but it was one of Maradona from years ago. And it wasn't like a normal skills Maradona. It was literally Maradona getting hacked down like loads, like getting roughed all over the place. Like he still managed the skills, but like he was actually able to hold his own. Really, really strong mentality in the midfield. And he's getting hacked around the place. He's getting shoved off the ball. He's able to shove other guys off the ball and stuff like that. But in the same vein, there's a lot of players at the moment who, if you're... I look at someone like Phil Foden at Man City, and he's a small guy, but he can handle it fairly well. You know what I mean? The same with Messi. Like, Messi is obviously under pressure and can kind of get kicked around the place, but like he can give it back just as much and he can get through a lot of tackles. He can break a lot of tackles because he just has the mentality and he has the speed and he has the awareness. And whether or not I have no doubt that he's like, you don't hear of him getting injured an awful, awful lot.
Yeah, you don't, Jim.
Because he's probably doing his gym work. He's making sure he's staying consistent. He's just kind of, you know, keeping on the ball. He's not living the dream, going crazy and stuff like this. But he also has a very big awareness, I would say, a very quiet awareness of his stature in the game and how much he can affect it. And like you see, there's a great video. Who put up the last day now? And it was literally just all of his goals. Just about 10 minutes of his goals. And you were just like, these are serious. And like the range of abilities that those kind of players would have. Now, obviously not everyone's going to get to the point where we're messing, but like you mentioned, if the gym is an important part of building as an important building block in that whole situation, then they're ideally built for those kind of smaller sessions, which means that they can enjoy them. They can get a certain amount of knowledge and awareness of what's appropriate for them. So that if they go to another club, it's not they can smell the BS a mile away. You know what I mean? And they can understand this is not ideal. And that's where it's interesting what the value of it, I think, at the moment. I think it's actually, especially with with the whole lockdown situation, things like the gym and the pitch sessions are godsends for their mental health and for just their enjoyment of the game. Like,
yeah, they are. Yeah, I agree.
There's this kind of a year is a strange one, probably because you have some players that haven't played an awful lot and they've just been like either living in the gym or they haven't, the convenience hasn't, like their whole living situation hasn't worked really well or whatever it is, or they're going through an injury. So they can pop back up out of nowhere and they're not like, well, I just trained my ass off and my timing now is perfect because, you know what I mean?
I know, I think going back to the point you made about Messi and that, like, it's so funny because some of the lads that I work with, they'll come up to me and go, Ryan, why do we have to do gym? Because Messi doesn't do gym, man. Like, when you're technically as good as Messi, you can have no gym at all. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, and in terms of going, there's obviously that age-old kind of thing about strength, like, you can have good strength in the gym, but you mightn't have it on the pitch. And that is so true because there's some people that just naturally know how to use their own body weight well in terms of protecting the ball, in terms of getting in front of the man, etc. So it all depends on the individual. Some of the boys that we have that wouldn't lift a great deal are really good at controlling their own body weight and using their body weight. But then, because I think that's maybe because they're more, I don't know, like perceptually like aware of their surroundings and awareness and that type of stuff. So again, it's just a whole kind of balancing act and
also. Yeah, I think it's probably you're in an interesting spot at that age group as well, because you can affect an awful lot of their mentality about how their career will potentially pan out and post career and things like this, because setting them up with good habits right now, and, you know, just positive, consistent strength work, awareness of how, like, the way I look at it is this, like, if they're in the gym now, working pretty hard, they're either recognizing one of two things. They're either recognizing that their career is potentially quite short and they have maybe 5 to 7 years of like good quality, and then they're like on the opposite end of it. But the goal really should be to get to them staying active throughout their life, you know what I mean? And not just hitting a high point and then going, I went through the floor, you know what I mean? So it's a challenge in that it's good, I think, that you have the level of interest from them in the gym for those kind of things. And it's important that the appropriate type of stuff is going in. Like, you could be putting in tons and tons and tons of work and just kind of running them into the ground.
Yeah.
And they could really regret that eventually in time, but they're not going to learn anything from it. Whereas something like the power work and stuff like that, if it's a small enough dose, they will learn about it because they're not having to expend loads of energy, mental energy on learning tons and tons and tons of different things. Yeah. They're able to just focus and they can bring that off and whatever they want. So like, even with the impending lockdown, like, because you haven't been throwing millions of things at them, now they have an awareness of what can be used quite quickly, you know?
Exactly. Like, I was saying something the other day, I was just saying, right, like, with this lockdown, obviously, I think we're kind of fortunate enough because we'll still be in the building. Because they're, well, I'm not actually sure what the crack is with that, but I think we'll be fine. Like,
yeah.
So we'll still be able to get our pitch work done, we'll still be able to get our plyometric work done. I might have to throw in some isometrics in there, maybe after warm-ups, etc. But it's just about finding ways to maintain that until the gyms open up, maintain that kind of physical qualities, do you know what I mean? So that's gonna be a challenge, but it should be all right. Like,
yeah, I suppose it's a hard one, especially kind of in season. That there's a bit of a different mentality to it. Now, probably in season, there's a bit of a, not necessarily a lowering of volume and intensity as it is, but just more of a maintenance mentality. But it depends. Yeah, the lockdowns are very weird because you have to kind of ebb and flow quite quickly in the intensity, and the body's going to be hard to stay resilient. Yeah.
Like in terms of our pitch load now for the next maybe couple of weeks, might have to kind of reduce it a wee bit slightly.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want in 4 or 5 weeks time then breaking down by increasing all the intensity with not having any of the gym work. So we're just gonna sit down and talk about that in terms of the management, what we're gonna do.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just thinking what the kind of structure is gonna look like going forward. We'll just be sitting down and have a chat about that. Like,
yeah. So I suppose I'm gonna finish up soon enough, Ryan. But I've one question now, and we mentioned kind of off air a little bit as well about lessons that we could kind of have, we could recommend to from our own experiences to other coaches and things that we've kind of learned. And from your position, working with some fairly high profile teams in different sports and stuff like that, even with the hockey and the rugby and stuff like that, is there any particular recommendations or things that you think that younger coaches or kind of graduate coaches and things like that can learn a bit more from yourself? Or like, is there anything you'd recommend them to do that you possibly did and you're like, I might change tact on that. If I had the time again, I might tweak it a bit differently or anything like that. Could you have a quick little chat about that?
Yeah. So in terms of lessons that I could get and give to people from my own career so far, I think that when you go into position or you get that kind of first position, don't go all guns blazing. Because this is probably not the worst decision I've ever made, but just to think about it now, so inexperienced. My first day at crew, I wanted to do fatigue. I wanted to do jump testing for fatigue monitoring when I didn't know any of the players. So I came in like just off my master's. I was like, right, lads, I want to get this in for jump test. Didn't even have a clue they didn't even know their names. Like, it was the stupidest thing I've ever done. Like, literally, I remember, and I was like, you're so stupid. So then I was like, I need to spend 6 weeks getting to know them, establish buying, and then we'll go after that.
Yeah.
I think some lessons that they definitely should take is like, they need, in this field, you need a network.
Mm.
Like, you need a network, and it's the networks, the friendships that you keep, the friendships that you make, keep them. Because I know for like, I will spend maybe once a week dropping a text to say some of like people down south and people in other fields, you know what I mean, just to keep in tabs with them, because you never know what's going to happen in this industry. And especially to learn off people, like I'm still doing a mentorship now with like Sam Portland, and that's been unbelievable in terms of like a mindset from like a personal development standpoint, not to mention his knowledge around speed training as well. But that definitely keeping a network, reaching out, and don't be afraid to ask questions. Like, I've asked some stupid questions before in my lifetime. Wow. I have asked some people from my masters will know that, like, but it's just because I'm so eager to learn.
Yeah.
And I think just keep asking questions, even if it's it doesn't sound good or it's a stupid question, just ask it anyway and reach out. Because people will, because especially me, like people have wrote to me before and said about how have you got there and what have you done? And then I would say, listen, just give me a call. Like, here's my number, give me a call. Because people are open, because we know the struggles, like, of how hard it is to get into. So I think that's kind of the main ones. Don't jump into something too quickly, and network and learn. Just, you need to learn, like, because this is obviously a really, really progressive industry. And every 6 months to a year, there's always a new big thing coming out, whether it be technology, methods of training, kind of, yeah, all that type of stuff. Do you know what I mean? So to keep on top of it as well.
Yeah.
It's a hard one because there's so much stuff being pumped out.
Yeah.
And it's hard, like, you know what? Like, over lockdown, there was so many webinars. And I was literally going through a period where I was like, what is the point in this? Like, literally, I remember one week I watched 7 webinars, and I don't actually think I took anything from any of them because my head was that full. So it was mentioned in one of our group chats the other night, that Irish one that we're in, I think we're talking about, people talk about periodization and planning, but do you periodize your learning? In terms of, so instead of trying to learn everything, you just pick one topic and really go at it for 4 to 6 weeks. So for me, for example, I made a conscious decision, it was like yesterday, that I really need to, me personally, need to pick on my knowledge around conditioning. Because I would say I'm too far one way, and knowledge around it, but definitely something I need to improve on. And I've said, right, over the next 6 weeks, I'm going to make a conscious effort to learn about that and read about that. And then maybe I'll cycle onto something else. So I think that's definitely a couple of pointers that could be
taken. Yeah, no, they're perfect. I think that kind of mentality is ideal for a younger coach to kind of get into it. Cause like you mentioned, like when you come out of college or you come out of the master, whatever it is, you're full of beans, you're full of energy for it. And like you mentioned, it's a really interesting industry to be in, like, because it changes so regularly, even the game changes, whatever it is. Like, I suppose a strange little offshoot would be even something like the whole VAR thing. Like, you wouldn't have thought that it would have made such a massive difference to some of the games, like, and how to manage that kind of stuff is very, very strange. You know what I mean? You don't know how much of it, like, how big of an impact it's going to have over the next few years, because it's relatively new to it. Like, but it's going to have a big effect on some huge games on a regular basis, and it's going to change even the offside kind of rule.
Yep.
And you change the tactics, you change the mentality of the strikers. You know what I mean? It becomes a different ballgame. I suppose I look at the, I look back at the likes of the goalkeepers when they were able to get back passes before.
Yeah.
And like, you look, watch some of those games, and the difference is huge in speed wise, in energy wise, in tactics. So with the same kind of mentality, I think when it comes to the coaching of any of these things and our approach to, like you mentioned, the conditioning or the activity and the type of, I suppose, energy that we have towards our careers at whatever level.
There's one more point I didn't mention, which you'll probably be an advocate of this yourself, like, need to get experience.
Yeah.
But like, experience is so important in this field. Like I know there's people that came out of masters with not one bit of coaching experience. And it's just like, how do you expect to walk into an elite job or a high level job? Like, and I've experienced in anything. I think I read, who was it? Was it Des Ryan put into the group the other night about coaching in, like, even your local community? There's a strength culture, a coach for any area or any age group. Do you know what I mean? Just get out and coach.
Yeah.
And it's so important. Like, and because of the way this industry is so saturated, you know, yourself, it's tough.
Yeah. But you see, I even think where you talked about your experience with the hockey or with the rugby, and even if it's only a certain amount of time you're with them,
you can pick
some really, really interesting things up, and you get more awareness of what this type of sport is, the way that they work things, this other type of sport, the way they work things, and see similarities, and then bringing them on. And I think that kind of stuff is invaluable, because I've had similar experiences with lots of different teams and different sports and different types of activities. And like, I think back to years ago when I was working in a university gym in Galway, yonks ago, like fucking, I don't know, years and years ago. But at one stage, like it was mental, because there was four other coaches on the in the gym. And we were like teaching spinning classes and whatever. But there was a point where I think probably like two summers in particular, that there was this huge influx of American students and like really high level American students, like athletes. And all we did for 3 months at a time, 4 months at a time, was just talk training and activities and research. And then we talked to them about what they were doing. We watched what they are doing. It was just crazy. So the experience levels in that were just unbelievable. Like, you come out of it and go, oh my God, my head is buzzing after every single session.
Like, yeah, I think that's, I'm definitely an advocate of, like, I would like watch a lot of kind of American style training and follow a lot of like American big hitters like Brett and Lewis Carhall, and there's loads of people I follow on online, like, which do some really, really good stuff in terms of strength and mission aspect, because they just love it over there. Like, they love strength and mission, and they love training for speed, and just their kind of philosophy is great. But I think it's definitely like, I signed up to a webinar over lockdown. It was with Boo, whatever his name is. He's a track and field strength and conditioning coach, and his the way he spoke about programming for strength and power, and it was like minimal effective dose, and it was a high load days, was crazy. And if you could even take one of that aspect into your own program, it's just about adding loads of different bullets to your gun, essentially, isn't it?
That's it. That's exactly it. But I think that's a big one. The experience situation is a challenging one. But even reaching out, like, obviously with the whole COVID situation, it's kind of challenging. We can do that. But like you mentioned, this is also a perfect time to really become aware of what's going on. Like, I've talked to you about different things. I've talked to other different people about different attributes of types of training and stuff. And I'm going to dig in more and more to those. And it would be something simple. Like, I would make another, like, set up another call with you where we would go through microdosing on a very detailed level, if you know what I mean, or whatever it is, and you pay for it or whatever it is. But something like that, I think, for younger coaches is invaluable, because you can get a huge amount of quick learning or a detailed learning in a shortest space of time. And you can disseminate then what's appropriate for your sport, what for your team, whatever it is, you know.
Like, it's even the other night, I done a webinar the other night, and it was about just general strength conditioning principles. And, you know, obviously, I'm sure you've seen it, the table of like residual training effects, et cetera, train speed every 5 days. The amount of people that message me afterwards saying, oh my God, I didn't know that speed starts to decrease if you don't expose us to that. Like, I was like, that's common sense. Like, it's the amount of people you think, because it's in our world, that's all over the place.
Normal. Yeah.
It's normal. But the amount of people that didn't know that, you'd be surprised. So it's definitely something, like, that's a topic you could dive into about why that is. Like, that's a lecture in itself, or a talk in itself.
Yeah. So, but I think that's the big one. I think that's why we love sports so much, and we love training so much, because there's so many holes in so many areas that still have to be either worked on or tidied up or improved on. And there's never a way we can get all of that done, but we can definitely get into the stuff we like and are interested in, you know.
I think it definitely boils down to what type of practitioner you are as well, like, doesn't it? Some people like this side, and some people like that element, and some people can make a case for that. And at the end of the day, everyone's trying to chase the same goal to make the team better, do you know what I mean? So it's interesting.
So have you any obviously you mentioned it kind of off topic or off the record about some other kind of things that you're working on potentially at the minute. Your current performance company is
RE Performance in Instagram.
RE Performance. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. And so that's a bit of an emphasis towards kind of speed and power work and any particular athletes who may need some work on that.
Yeah. Speed and power work, kind of going after the kind of demographic of helping kind of amateur Gaelic footballers, footballer team sport athletes, and obviously trying to fit in snippets of just to kind of help everyone, essentially. So it's kind of bleed of the two. I'm trying to anyway. Sometimes I dip in and out of what I actually want to do, but that's the kind of what I'm going after. Like, yeah.
Cool. And so with Wednesday, have you any particular, like, goals for your work with Wednesday in the next couple of years or anything like that?
Is it the case in terms of I'm doing a lot of speaking to there's a couple of lads from, they're on an Instagram site called Game Sharp, and we had like a meeting, they're two good friends of mine, and what I really want to kind of look into is force velocity profiling off kind of speed work. So like breaking down like a 40 meter sprint, looking at where the athlete is not developing. Or so for example, breaking down and linking physical characteristics to that part of the sprint. So for example, okay, if they're fast over 0 to 10 meters, but they're poor from 10 meters to 30 meters, what kind of physical quality matches that section of a sprint? Because I really, again, going back to the speed work, I'm doing a lot of stuff around that. So I kind of want to gear my programming all around kind of improving speed.
Nice.
Doing a lot of reading into that.
Cool. So JB, that's Murray. Game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cool. So that's Game Sharp.
Game Sharp. Yeah, they have an Instagram page. It's Sam Farmer and Tommy Monday. Two very, very good coaches, English lads. Two very, very good coaches. So I think that's just, but again, it's trying to find time. Like I've got a list of papers on my laptop here. I've got about 6 papers, all JB Marin stuff. And it's like, how am I gonna try my time to get that in? But, right? I'm one of them papers messes with my head as well. So it's like
exactly that, you know what I mean? So that's the only thing is that you're, I think we always, I kind of always rave about like all these mad long-term plans, but like the process is just as fun to kind of dig in on a consistent basis. Like you mentioned, the next kind of few weeks of a lockdown, you'll get a bit of time to do that, a bit of opportunity, refine a bit, learn a bit more about the players. I suppose just improve our coaching in general in different ways than we would kind of normally.
But there's literally one thing I'd probably be, people that know me, one thing that I'd be probably weakness is time management, essentially, in terms of, because I've got 4 books I'm looking at now and on my table, and I've dipped in and out of a couple of them books, but I've never actually read any of them books once, like the full thing, because I just struggle, because I'll start to read a paper and then something else will pop up on Twitter and I'll think, Jesus, I'll read that, and then finished, I'm wrecked. Do you know what I mean? It's just about, kind of, for me, prioritizing time to really dive into a subject in terms of going back to the kind of periodizing your learning. So that's kind of where I'm going to be at the next kind of up to 6 weeks.
Diving into that. Nice. Good stuff. Yeah. Well, hopefully things kind of settle back down. We'll have a bit of a Christmas, touch wood, and in both countries, in England and Ireland, we'll kind of get a bit of a chance to. But anyway, so if I'm going to leave you to it, Ryan, if anybody wants to get in touch with you, how can they give you a shout?
Yeah, so they could get in touch with my email. So that's rdevlin10@icloud.com. That's kind of main email I use. Obviously, Instagram is probably a really good source as well. Like, I'm always on it, just looking through stuff. rdperformance_. That's probably the two main ones. And then I'm on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, Twitter. Cool.
So just type in my kind of handles and they'll come up in there as well.
Sweet, sweet. Well, thanks a million, Ryan, for joining me. It's been a really good, interesting chat.
Yeah, it's been a good chat. It's been good.
Good stuff. So hopefully you'll have a lovely day. And thanks again for joining me, dude.
Yeah, not a problem. Not a problem. See you soon.
All right, folks. So you've just been listening to episode number 59 of the Humble Coach Podcast with Ryan Devlin. So first of all, guys, I want to say a massive thank you to Ryan for joining me on the show today. Much appreciated, Ryan, for taking the time out of your day. I hope you have a great day, dude. Also, folks, just want to say a massive thank you for all the continued support of the podcast. It's always really, really appreciated. And I think we're back in the groove pretty well at the moment. So looking forward to bringing some more really interesting guests on the show over the next while. If you'd like to check out any of the other podcasts that we've got in our back catalog, you can find us on Spotify, on Podbean, on iTunes, and pretty much wherever else you find your podcasts, we'll be there. Have a nice day, folks. We'll see you soon.